This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Michael Gustafson. Dr. Gustafson is the CEO and president of the University of Massachusetts Memorial Medical Center and Health System. We're talking today about digital health. Obviously, this past year, we've seen digital health accelerate tremendously. To at one point in time during the pandemic, 80-90% of visits were being done through digital health. Now that number's moved down a little bit. But really about what he sees over the next 5 to 10 years in terms of where digital health will land and how it will evolve, and also the ability of digital health to impact health equity. Dr. Gustafson, can I ask you to take a moment to introduce yourself, then we'll dive right into sort of digital health and what you see over the next few years.
Absolutely. Good morning, Scott. It's great to be back talking to you. I'm a physician. I trained as a general surgeon. I've been in hospital administration in the Boston, Massachusetts market for about 30 years. And I've been the president at UMass Memorial Medical Center for about 3 years, about half of which we've been in the pandemic. So,
Dr. Gustafson, take a moment and talk to us about what do you see over the next several years in terms of the digital health? What do you see right now? What did you see the last few months? And what do you expect it to look like 5 to 7 years from now?
Sure. So, I was going to just start by describing how I think about digital health or the tools, right? Because it's become a very broad definition. So I think if you say that it includes all digital technologies that are designed to improve health, that pretty much includes things like patients' access to their medical record electronically, virtual telehealth visits, mobile health apps, which have really exploded in the market. I think somebody said there's 300,000 apps that are out there now, a variety of online tools, and most recently, artificial intelligence. So it's quite the set of tools or a platform. And I think that's the way we should think about it. I think that's the way we're thinking about it strategically. Right? So these are enhanced ways to really accomplish our overall objectives, which at the end of the day is to improve our quality and safety for our patients, to provide higher value. So, taking care of patients at an even lower cost, driving more and more care into patients' home, and to enhance our diagnostic and treatment capabilities. So I think it's a huge opportunity for the next 5 to 10 years.
And what do you expect in terms of, do you look at in terms of percentage of patient visits? Will it be a hybrid model? Will it be very different based on specialty? What are some observations about what you expect and how to develop?
Yep. I've talked a lot with each of our chairs about that very issue. We saw at the peak of the pandemic, probably 2 out of 3 of ambulatory visits converted over to telehealth, either video or phone encounters. I think as things settled back down over the summer, and now after our most recent peak, we're back to about 10 to 20% of visits being video or tele. That's still a great increase from where we started before all of this, which was only a few percentage points, but it's nowhere near where we reached at the top of the pandemic. So I definitely think it's going to settle out as a hybrid model. And I think each specialty is really kind of in that process of figuring out what's the best application, right? What types of visits lend themselves to the telehealth interventions? I think it's still very much in flux.
What about, for example, one of the things that changed a lot over the years was urgent care. If I went back 10 years ago to see an urgent care appointment, you really did it. You either called your doctor, made an appointment, and often it was very difficult to get an appointment, or then physician office started to have a sick call, at least a period of the morning. You could come in sort of unannounced, unexpected.
Yep.
And then all these urgent cures popped up, and it had multiple different impacts. It forced primary care physicians to be much more responsive in taking phone calls and be like, oh, no, we can get you in, because they knew they were losing lots of business to urgent care. What do you see with urgent care? Will this be another evolution in urgent care where you had this big shift from primary care offices to urgent care? We now see a lot of shift, instead of like you've got something on your skin or you've got a kid who's got a cough, will you now see a big shift to that being done virtually or by telehealth? Or how will that look in a few years?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a potential. Right? So a lot of the electronic medical record applications with a telehealth digital component – can be set up so that, you know, for the top 10 most common kind of primary care or walk-in urgent care conditions, that can really be dealt with, you know, through a questionnaire and a dialogue with the patient and the practice. And that can lead to a lot of triaging without having the patient come in. So a lot more of those things, I think, can be dealt with virtually than they are currently.
In terms of health equity, I mean, the virtual health, telehealth, on one hand, can be a debacle for health equity because you have some situations where families don't have the right internet, the right Wi-Fi, and so forth. On the other hand, you have these, you know, healthcare deserts, you know, so to speak, to use a word from the food desert concept, of where there's not access to primary care, there's not access to physicians. So what on balance, can virtual health help improve healthcare access and help solve some of the inequity problems? Or like in education, it almost exasperated them because so many very rural areas and urban areas have horrible Wi-Fi. So this year is almost like a non-school year for some kids. Will this exasperate things or help things?
Yeah, I think it's it can do both. I think that's exactly the point where we're at now. So you can think of examples where digital health is really helping with reducing burdens, improving access, right? A great success story in behavioral health. Behavioral health has been one of the areas to convert many, many more and increase their telehealth visits. And the studies are showing that that's a really effective intervention for managing mental health conditions. On the other hand, it can create what's evolving to be the digital health divide, right, or the digital health gap. And so I think it's, as we are thinking about all these different digital health tools, really being very conscious of making sure that they're rolled out in an equitable way. You know, I think about the, if you think about a key part of the digital health of somebody's access to their medical record and access to these health apps, you know, it starts with, as you said, internet access, right? We still have about 25 million Americans who don't have broadband access currently. Then you have to have a device. We know that there's still some gaps in folks that, although I think that gap is closing, both with minorities and with elderly. But then it's a matter of when you interact with the device, you know, the app, is it done in a way that addresses digital literacy, health literacy, and language barriers? You know, most apps and medical record portals are still only in English, right? So that's the very first fundamental gap to get over. And then finally, when you, if somebody is able to access it, is it designed in a culturally appropriate way, right? That's going to really pull different groups in and have them engage fully in the intent of the app or the of the interaction. So those are very conscious actions or decisions at each point along that journey, if you will.
No, it's fascinating, actually. Is there Wi-Fi? Is there devices? Are there different ways that this can be worked to make it a net positive versus a net negative? And this year, it's been quite challenging, it certainly seems, in terms of it has the ability. I mean, you and I know coverage is one issue. And at some point, I think most of us come to the conclusion we need to get coverage for everybody. But then even with coverage, the hope is that these kinds of technologies will actually help on access, which is certainly as big a problem or challenge as coverage is at this point.
Right. One of the examples, very concrete and timely, is in Massachusetts rolling out the statewide vaccination program for COVID. And a large part of that has been standing up these apps or computer programs, right, where people can log on and register for appointments at about 200 different sites. But even that is, if not done correctly, can create disparities, right? Because people's access to the computer, to those apps, to have the time to actually sit, because many times it's taking hours to sit at the computer until you can find an available appointment, let alone then once you have an appointment, right, where the appointments are, and is that done in a way that's equitable? But lots of discussion in the state around the apps are not sufficient, enough so that we've stood up supplemental call centers for the elderly and for others in challenged groups so that they can have more direct access to a human being for help with getting their appointment.
Right. I mean, the app thing is a perfect example. It's one of these things where if you're very computer savvy and know how to keep on working and clicking and working through it, it makes it easier to get an appointment. And if you don't have good Wi-Fi, if you're not very computer savvy, it makes it impossible to get an appointment. And also there's different social networks that pass around the codes and pass away that we get in and stuff like that. And
exactly.
Some of us are more adept at that than others. And so you end up like with whole communities. And that's where exactly these mass vaccination sites, these bringing mobile vaccinations to communities have done a huge job to fill those gaps. And it's constantly looking at different hybrid models to make sure we actually fill these gaps in a consistent way as we hopefully bring everybody up through better technology and trying to address health equity that way. But in the meantime, so it's constant hybrid efforts, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to mention one other digital health example during COVID. And that was, you know, as we set up our field hospital in Worcester, which between the two waves had over 1,000 patients and avoided, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 patient days, we developed a screening app, you know, a digital application to try to identify the right patients who would be stable enough to be transferred from either the ED or from the inpatient to go to the field hospital for what turned out to be an average about 4 or 5 day recovery. That's a good example of literally, you know, very quickly developing a digital screening tool to help identify this subset of patients who could be in an alternative care site. What we're evolving that to be in our next phase very actively is a hospital at home program, where you can imagine, you know, it's the same issue. Somebody comes into the ED, you want to identify the subset of patients who could be admitted to a home bed, basically where we have home physician visits, nursing visits, wraparound services, and actually evolving evidence shows that they can do better in their home than being admitted to an inpatient. But both the screening and then all of the things that enable a home hospital are all about digital health.
They really are. You think about sort of in digital health and the landscape of Wi-Fi in sort of a very inner city home, inner city high-rise, when you think about it maybe in terms of a very rural area, and if Wi-Fi is not 24/7 and working well, digital home has huge gaps in it. And then you also need the tools and devices at home to access and connect correctly too. So it's an undertaking, and you do see sort of fascinating movement towards hospital to home, you know, particularly for illnesses, more and more of that versus hospital admissions, and this evolution that really is starting to accelerate. In different than home health, but a very interesting sort of hybrid development and so forth. Dr. Gustafson, I want to thank you for joining us today. We'd love to dig deeper into the subject with you at another time as we see digital health evolve and get your thoughts on it and also other issues that you're seeing, Dr. Gustafson. It's always a pleasure to visit with you, and what a magnificent job you folks did through the COVID era, and hopefully this COVID era is, we can actually call an era at some point.
I look forward to be able to see it in the rearview mirror, as you said. So I really appreciate
100%.
Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today, Scott.
Always, Dr. Gustafson. What a pleasure. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks a lot.